She wasn't supposed to remember what I buried, but she did. I gaslit her to protect a secret I swore would never surface. I changed her memories. I shifted her reality. But now the journal's back. The reflection in the mirror doesn't match my face. And the woman I thought I broke? She's smiling now, because she's been rewriting me all along. Welcome to the story where gaslighting never ends. Because the moment I stopped manipulating her, she started manipulating me. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation audiobook. If you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss a story. Today, we're honored to bring you, You Stay Gaslighting Me. Get ready to immerse yourself in a powerful, mind-blowing manipulation thriller that will leave you on the edge of your seat. Because here, our mission is to keep you coming back for more. So without further ado, let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1. The door was already open. It wasn't that she stayed. It was that she stayed quiet. There was a moment, just a sliver of silence between the sound of her keys hitting the table and her breath catching in her throat, when I knew I hadn't gotten away with it. I was standing in the hallway, pretending to look for my headphones, heart punching against my ribs like it wanted out. She came in from work with the same tired grace as always. Hair pulled up, lips pursed, bag slipping off her shoulder like gravity worked harder on her than on anyone else. She didn't look at me right away, but I could feel it. That pause. That subtle tightening in her posture. The shift in her breathing. The fact that she didn't sigh the way she usually did when she walked through the door, like the weight of the world finally got to rest for a minute. No. This time, the weight stayed on. "I saw your phone," she said eventually. Her voice wasn't angry. Not even sharp. It was worse than that. It was flat. I turned around slowly, trying to conjure up a smile that didn't feel like a mask, but already knew I was too late. "My phone. You left it unlocked." Pause. I didn't look. I wasn't trying to. It just lit up, and I couldn't not see it. She looked at me now. Not through me, at me. Like I was something she'd picked up at a thrift store and suddenly realized was more dangerous than valuable. I walked closer. Too close. Put my hand on her arm, gently, like I was some kind of victim of misunderstanding. "What did you see?" She didn't answer. Which meant she saw everything. I hadn't cheated. Not technically, but there were texts, messages from someone I used to know, a woman who had a voice like sugar and eyes like smoke. Nothing recent, nothing real, just digital ghosts from months ago, things I thought I'd deleted, things I thought didn't count because they weren't physical. But to her, betrayal doesn't come with fingerprints. It comes with patterns, with silence, with stories that don't line up, with jokes I laughed too hard at. With memories that started shifting shapes without her permission. That's what she really saw. Not the phone. The pattern. "I thought we were getting better," she said softly. "I thought you were really trying." "I am." "Then why do I feel like I'm losing pieces of myself every time I talk to you?" The thing is, when someone you love starts doubting their own memories, it doesn't look like a horror movie. It looks like quiet confusion. Like forgetting where you left your earrings and thinking it's your fault. Like apologizing before asking a question. Like smiling while your insides twist because you feel wrong, but you can't prove it. I'd done that to her. Not just once. Not just recently. But over months. Years. I don't even remember when it started. But here's what she didn't know. I stopped doing it to protect myself. Now, I was doing it to survive her. Because something about her had changed. She didn't cry when she found the texts. She didn't yell. She didn't leave. She stayed. And now I don't think it's because she's in love. I think it's because she's planning something. That night, I couldn't sleep. She lay beside me, her breathing even, her body warm, but I could feel the space between us, wide, echoing, like we were on opposite sides of a canyon and pretending the bed was a bridge. Around 2 a.m., I got up and went to the kitchen. Her notebook was there. Not the usual one. A new one. Black. Smaller. Untouched. I opened it. The first page was blank. The second wasn't. "Let's see if he notices what I change tomorrow. He still thinks he's in control. That's how I know I'm winning." I snapped the notebook shut. Stared at the hallway mirror. For a second, just a second, I thought I saw her standing behind me. But when I turned around, the hallway was empty. She's gaslighting me now. I know it. She's changing things. Shifting them back. Correcting her narrative. "I moved her ring dish last week. She moved it back and said nothing. I told her we never watched that movie." She described a scene in perfect detail. I said she dreamt it. She smiled and said, maybe I did. But her eyes said, you're losing track, and I'm not helping you find your way back this time. It was always supposed to be me. I was the one who bent the world. I was the one who rewrote reality. Now I feel like I'm the one being rewritten. And the scariest part? I think she's better at it than I ever was. Chapter 2. The version of me she wants me to be. You don't realize how easy it is to lose your grip until someone starts showing you exactly where your hands used to be. The next morning felt like someone else's memory. She was already in the kitchen, standing barefoot by the stove, flipping pancakes with the same easy rhythm she used back when we were good. Or maybe before we were good. I'm not sure there's a difference anymore. The sunlight through the windows was soft. Too soft. Like someone turned down the contrast on the entire apartment. Everything looked peaceful. That's how I knew something was wrong. Because when someone knows they have power over you, they stop raising their voice. They start smiling more. Sleep okay? She asked, her tone light. Familiar. I blinked. Yeah. She turned to me, spatula in hand. Good. You were mumbling in your sleep again. My pulse ticked behind my eyes. What did I say? She shrugged. I don't know. Something about a boat. A beat of silence. I hadn't told her about the boat dream. I'd barely admitted it to myself. A flash of something wet and heavy. A rope. A voice saying my name underwater. But she knew. She shouldn't have known. I laughed nervously. Must have been a weird dream. Her eyes didn't leave mine. She smiled. Must have been. There were new photos on the wall. I don't mean photos I forgot we had. I mean photos we never took. A shot of us at a lake. Me with my arm around her, holding a fishing rod. Smiling. She's in a white sundress. I hate fishing. She hates lakes. But there we were. I stared at the frame for almost a full minute before she walked up behind me and said, that was a good day, wasn't it? I turned to her. My voice caught in my throat. We've never been there. She blinked. Frowned. Not confused. Just disappointed. Babe, we took that during the summer we got the Jeep. Remember? You got sunburned so bad you peeled for days. I don't remember ever owning a Jeep. I don't remember a lake. But she said it so gently. So confidently. Like maybe I'd just forgotten. And for a second, I almost believed her. That afternoon, I called a therapist. Not Lansbury. Not anyone official. Just a number I found scribbled in the back of an old notebook, next to a name I didn't recognize. Mia, 2 p.m. safe line. I don't remember writing it. When the voice on the line picked up, it was soft. Calm. This is Mia. I hesitated. I think someone's rewriting my memories. She didn't laugh. She didn't ask my name. She just said, how long has it been happening? I told her everything. Well, not everything. I told her about the photos. The journal. The texts. The way my girlfriend says things that fit but feel wrong. Mia listened quietly. Then she said, when someone has been manipulated for too long, they start to internalize the rhythm of it. Even when the manipulation stops, the pattern continues in their head. What does that mean? It means she might not even have to gaslight you anymore. Silence. Then, you might be doing it to yourself now. I hung up, stared at my reflection in the microwave door, and whispered, what if I am? That night, she sat on the balcony and read a book. I don't know which one, the cover was blank. It looked old, the pages yellowed like newsprint. I watched her from the hallway, hidden behind the curtain. She didn't move for almost an hour. Just sat there, legs tucked beneath her. Calm. Unbothered. When I finally walked out and sat beside her, she didn't look up. She just turned a page and said, you've been watching me more lately. I didn't answer. She glanced sideways. Are you waiting for me to mess up? Something like that. She closed the book, finally, and placed it on her lap. Then she said the thing that kept me awake until morning. You keep looking for signs that I'm lying, because you're scared I'm telling the truth. The next day, I found my own handwriting on a sticky note I never wrote, stuck to the inside of the bathroom mirror. She was always 10 steps ahead. You just stopped counting. I tried to confront her again, sat her down, tried to stay calm. I think you're changing things, I said. She furrowed her brows. Changing what? I think you're rewriting details, replacing memories, maybe even making me forget things. She looked at me, eyes wide, and whispered, isn't that what you used to do? Silence. She leaned closer. Her voice dropped to a whisper. Or are you mad because I'm better at it than you were? I stood, shaking. I walked to the bathroom, locked the door, and stared at myself in the mirror. I touched the glass. My reflection didn't move right away. I don't know if I'm being manipulated anymore. I don't know if I ever stopped. All I know is, she smiles in her sleep now. And that smile feels like the most dangerous thing I've ever seen. Chapter 3. Found footage of a life I didn't live. There's no such thing as reclaiming control once you've taught someone how to take it from you. It started with a folder I didn't remember creating. On my laptop, buried deep, hidden under layers of renamed documents and blank PDFs, titled Project May. I hadn't opened that laptop in weeks. I hadn't even used that password in months. But there it was waiting. Inside the folder were 6 video files, each one timestamped, each one labeled with her name. Except here's the thing. She wasn't in any of them. Only I was. The first clip was shaky, surveillance-like, filmed from an angle just above the bedroom door, where no camera should have been. I was lying in bed, eyes open, staring at the ceiling like I was waiting for something to fall from it. Then slowly I sat up and began talking, not to anyone, not to the camera, to the air. She knows. She's watching me while I sleep. She moves my things when I'm in the shower. She left that sticky note. I didn't write that, but she smiles like it's all still normal, like she doesn't know I'm catching on. I think she's replacing me. I think she already has. I paused the video, backed away from the laptop. My stomach turned in on itself, because I didn't remember ever saying those words. I didn't remember the night, the conversation, the feeling, but it was my voice, my face, my body, just not my memory. The second video was worse. I was in the living room this time. It was daytime, bright, warm. I looked normal, calm, smiling, except I wasn't alone. A woman sat across from me. Not her, someone else. Someone with curly brown hair and gold bracelets and a voice like melting ice. She was asking me questions. Do you think she's capable of harming you? Has she ever repeated phrases you know you only said once? Have you considered that she's doing all this to show you who you really are? I laughed in the footage. Said something about paranoia, joked about being a writer, but my hands, they were trembling. Then I said something I wish I could forget. I think she's not the only one gaslighting me. The screen went black. When I looked up, she was standing in the doorway. My girlfriend, the woman I thought I'd broken years ago. Only she didn't look broken now. She looked curious. "What are you watching?" she asked softly. I slammed the laptop shut. "Nothing." She tilted her head. "You've been talking in your sleep again." I didn't answer. She walked slowly toward me, sat on the couch, too close, then whispered, "Was I in the dream this time? Or was it the other woman again?" My blood froze. I hadn't told her about that. I hadn't told anyone. The woman in the video. I remembered her now. Briefly. Flashes. A therapist? A researcher? Someone I only met once. Her name started with a C. Or an M. Or, I don't know. Maybe she wasn't real. Maybe I made her up. Maybe she put her there. Later that night, I checked my phone for the Voice Memos app. It was gone. Deleted. When I reinstalled it, one file remained. Untitled. 37 minutes long. I pressed play. My voice. Whispering. Rambling. Circling. Over and over. I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to. She's not the same anymore. She's someone else. What if she's doing this because I taught her how? What if I left the door open and she walked through it carrying all of me? Then silence. Then another voice. Not hers. Not mine. Just a whisper. You remember it wrong, because that's safer than the truth. I threw the phone across the room. It didn't break. It never breaks. The apartment felt too small that night. Like the walls had moved closer by a few inches. Like the air was heavier. Like the pictures on the wall were tilting just slightly toward me, like they were listening. She made tea. Chamomile. Her favorite. Except she hates chamomile. Always said it smelled like rot. I asked her about it. She smiled. It's my new thing. I woke up around 3 a.m. She wasn't in bed. I found her standing in the hallway, barefoot, wearing one of my shirts, just staring at the mirror. Her reflection wasn't smiling, but she was. She didn't flinch when I walked up behind her. Didn't speak. I placed a hand on her shoulder. She whispered, "This version of you, it's my favorite." I didn't sleep after that. I laid in bed and wondered, what version is she talking about? The boyfriend? The liar? The one unraveling? Or the one who never really existed? Chapter 4, The Evidence That Proved Nothing. Gaslighting doesn't erase your memories. It replaces them with versions that don't scream when you touch them. I tore the apartment apart. Not like in the movies, no shouting, no glass shattering, no maniacal breakdown. It was quiet, careful, calculated. I needed proof. Something to tether me to the version of reality that hadn't betrayed me yet. An email, a timestamp, a receipt, something with ink, with numbers, something that couldn't lie. But everything I found was off. Not wrong off. A coffee shop receipt dated 6 months ago, signed with my name, except I haven't been to that cafe in over a year. A boarding pass for a trip we never took. A framed photo of us at a restaurant I've never set foot in, smiling, hands entwined, timestamp in the corner like a signature forged in digital ink. And in all of it, every one, she looked at me like she'd already won. I opened an old hard drive I'd backed up before I met her. Or thought I had. Inside were documents I didn't remember writing, journal entries, drafts of emails, strange diagrams. Flowcharts labeled with phrases like narrative control timeline, version 3 post breakdown, subject response, passive slash reactive, test stable, primary memory anchor. You never said that. I blinked, closed the folder, reopened it. The files were gone. I sat in the dark for a long time after that. No TV, no phone, just the slow, electric hum of the fridge behind me and the crackling in my head where thoughts used to be. She came in around 8, fresh-faced, hair braided, eyes soft, wearing that oversized gray sweater I always thought looked too cozy to be threatening. She kissed the top of my head and asked, "Long day?" I didn't answer, didn't move, just stared at the blank television screen, because in the reflection, I looked like someone else. Later, when she was in the shower, I went back to the hallway mirror, the one that had been there since we moved in. Only now, it was framed differently. The trim was thicker, the glass less warped, the angles no longer quite as sharp. I would have brushed it off as paranoia, except for one thing. My initials were etched into the bottom right corner. Etched, like a signature. Only I never carved anything there. I never touched that mirror with anything sharp. And then I remembered something she said months ago, maybe a year. If I ever needed to prove you were slipping, I'd change one small thing at a time until you begged me to lie to you again. At the time, I thought she was joking. Now, I wasn't sure. That night, I tried to trap her. Nothing violent. Nothing dramatic. Just a simple test. I moved the photo of us at the lake from the hallway to the bookshelf. Then I deleted every trace of it from my phone. I cleared the Google Photos cache. I made sure it wasn't backed up anywhere. Then I waited. In the morning, I stood by the hallway. Stared at the empty nail where the photo used to hang. She came out in her robe, sipping coffee. Stopped. Frowned. "Did you move the lake photo?" My throat tightened. "What lake photo?" She looked at me. Softly. No judgment. No anger. Just patience. "The one from summer 2 years ago. The day you made us leave early because of the thunderstorm." I paused. "I don't remember that." She nodded slowly. "That's okay. That's why I'm here." Then she walked over to the bookshelf, picked up the frame, and rehung it exactly where it had been. Same angle. Same dust pattern on the wall. Like I'd never moved it at all. I thought I was catching her. Instead, I caught myself. That afternoon, a voicemail appeared on my phone. No missed call. No number. Just the message. "You were warned. You just didn't believe her voice was yours." Then a long silence. Then laughter. Soft. Familiar. Mine. The next day, she gave me a gift. Wrapped in brown paper, tied with string. "I thought this might help," she said. Inside, a small leather-bound journal. Empty pages. Blank. Waiting. She smiled. "Write it all down. That way, when you forget what's real, you can at least remember what you believed." I opened to the first page. Someone had already written there in black ink. "What you remember is just what you've agreed to forget." I threw the book across the room. It landed softly. She didn't even blink. I tried to leave that night. Really leave. I packed a bag. Charged my phone. Walked down 12 flights of stairs to the street. The night air hit me like a confession. It smelled like rain. Like earth. Like memory. I made it to the bus stop. Then I checked my wallet. Driver's license, my face. Her address. But the name wasn't mine. It was hers. I stumbled back inside before sunrise. She was waiting by the door. No anger. Just a single question. Are you ready to stop fighting it now? I didn't answer. I just collapsed into her arms. And as she held me, I whispered, What version of me do you want tonight? She kissed my forehead and said, The one who stops asking questions. Chapter 5, The Lie Inside the Language. She never needed to convince me I was crazy. She just needed to wait until I started doing it to myself. Words started slipping first. Small ones, like curtain, or sleeve, or greater. I would reach for them mid-sentence, mid-thought, and they'd vanish, like turning the corner in your own home and forgetting what room you were in. At first, I blamed it on stress, on lack of sleep, on the creeping paranoia that had been crawling up the walls of my skull for weeks. But when I opened my mouth to say microwave, and mirror came out instead, I stopped pretending. I tried writing again. She encouraged it. Left the leather journal in plain sight every morning, a pen nestled in the spine like an invitation. The first few pages made sense. I scribbled observations, questions, time-stamped thoughts. But by the fifth day, my handwriting had changed. It was neater. Not mine. More curved. More feminine. The words weren't mine either. He asked me again if the mirror moved. I told him it never had. But I smiled too soon. I know he noticed. Tonight, I'll move the chair 6 inches. Let's see how long it takes. He's afraid of being rewritten. He doesn't realize I started months ago. I flipped to the final page. A sentence stared back at me. This was never your journal. I closed the book. Burned the book. Watched the flame eat the truth with the hunger of a god. She didn't ask about it. She never mentioned it again. But a new journal appeared on the kitchen table the next day. Same leather. Same pen. Already open to a fresh, blank page. The apartment changed again. I know because I measured it. I taped string to the wall, marked every edge, every corner. Next morning, half an inch shorter in the hallway, 2 inches narrower in the kitchen. Even the mirror shrank. Or maybe the frame grew. Either way, something wasn't the same. I began speaking in half sentences. Not to her. To myself. To the air. To the walls. Sometimes I'd say, Don't forget the. If she moves the. You're not the same since. But the endings never came. They evaporated. Like the words were being edited in real time, cut out of my mouth before they could land. She noticed. Of course she did. She always does. I think I'm losing language, I told her one night. We were on the couch, her head in my lap, her fingers tracing circles on my wrist. She didn't look up, didn't blink, just said, Good. Language lies more than silence ever will. That night, I tried to record myself, just to hear what I sounded like, just to remember how my voice used to work, just to prove something existed beyond her gaze. The recording app glitched. Only one file saved. 6 seconds. I played it. It was her voice. You should stop trying to remember. You already agreed to forget. I stopped trying after that. Time became a suggestion. Days looped. I would blink and find the sun in the same spot as yesterday. Or wake up to the exact same breakfast plate. Or hear the same conversation repeat, word for word, as if we were actors in a poorly written script. Didn't we already do this? I asked once. She smiled, kissed my cheek. We're just stuck in a rhythm. Happens to everyone. But her tone didn't match the words. And the reflection in the window behind her wasn't smiling. It was watching. One night, I dreamed of the girl again. The one I never talk about. The one I might have forgotten on purpose. The one who drowned or ran, or maybe never existed at all. She stood at the edge of the dock in the dream, soaking wet, face blurred, and she whispered, You were the first one she practiced on. I woke up screaming. She was already sitting beside me calm, holding a glass of water, like she'd been waiting for the scream. Who am I to you? I asked her the next morning. I meant it. I wanted an answer. A real one. She looked at me like I was a page she'd read too many times. Like the ending no longer interested her. Then she said, You're the version of you I decided to keep. That broke something in me. Not like glass. More like fabric. Tearing slowly, stitch by stitch, until all that was left was thread. I don't talk much now. I write less. I think mostly in images. Symbols. Her hand. My eyes. A mirror tilting. A door that shouldn't open. A name that feels like teeth in my mouth. I asked her again one night who I was. She was brushing her hair in the mirror. Didn't even pause. You're my favorite lie, she said. Then added gently. And the longer you believe it, the more real you become. I looked in the mirror after she left the room. I saw someone. Not me. Not quite. He looked tired. He looked scared. He looked ready to surrender. So I smiled for him. And this time, he smiled back. Chapter 6, The Version That Replaced Me. The lie wasn't that I was being manipulated. The lie was that I was ever real enough to resist it. The man on the screen wasn't me. At least, not anymore. He looked like me. Sounded like me. Moved the way I moved when I used to know where my feet were going. But he smiled differently. Softer. Slower. As if smiling was a secret only he understood. She played the footage for me without speaking. Just pressed play, sat back on the couch, and watched me watch myself. "Hey," the man on the screen said, waving lazily. "If you're watching this, then she finally showed it to you." I looked at her. She didn't look back. Only stared at the screen like it was a mirror. "Relax. I'm not a warning. I'm not a threat. I'm just the version of you that figured it out. Or maybe the version she let figure it out. Same thing." I shut the laptop. Hard. Stood up. But the ground beneath me still felt like it moved half a second slower than my body. "What the hell is this?" She tilted her head. "A memory." "Of what?" "Of who you were. Who you could have been. Who you might still be." I wanted to yell. Wanted to throw something. But I didn't trust what was mine anymore. Not my voice. Not my hands. Not even my anger. So I sat back down and said, "Tell me the truth." She leaned forward, slow and deliberate, like she was about to tell a child that Santa never existed. "You don't have one truth," she said. "That's the whole problem." "Then give me yours. I've already been giving it to you." "Since when?" She smiled. "Since the day you told me I was crazy." That shut me up, because I remembered that day. The rain. The argument. Her standing by the door with tears in her eyes saying, "I know what you said, even if you're pretending you didn't say it." And me whispering back, "You're misremembering. You always do this." I remember the tone in her voice when she said, "One day, you're going to drown in your own edits." She stood up and walked to the hallway mirror, ran her fingers along the frame like she was petting something alive. "You called me fragile," she said. "I thought I was protecting you." "No," she said, voice razor thin. "You were protecting the version of me that wouldn't fight back." She turned then, eyes sharp, expression unreadable, and said, "You're not the victim. You're the aftermath." That night, I tried to leave again. No bag this time. No plan. Just movement. I walked the hallway. The door opened into blackness. No street. No light. No stars. Just absence. Like stepping off the edge of a dream. I closed the door. It vanished behind me. Now there were three more doors. All closed. All labeled. Again. Almost. Alone. I chose the third. Inside, the apartment again. But not quite. Colors slightly off. Photos in the wrong frames. A scent I couldn't name. And her, reading on the couch, but wearing the dress I burned a year ago. I backed out. Closed the door. Opened another. Same apartment. Different me. Laughing. Joking. Smiling like nothing had ever broken. She was there, too. Smiling back. Eyes full of love. I slammed the door. My lungs collapsed inside my chest. I'm not the only version. I'm not even the first. Just the one that broke at the right time. The next day, she handed me a folder. Inside, a birth certificate, with my name, but a different birthday. An ID, same photo, different address. A journal entry in my handwriting, but written in a language I couldn't read. A doctor's note from a psychiatrist I've never met. A photo of us, me smiling, her laughing, at a beach I've never seen. She said nothing. Just placed the folder on the table. Kissed my cheek. And left the apartment. I opened the last item in the folder. A voice memo on a USB. Plugged it in. My voice. I give her permission to reconstruct me. I no longer trust my own version. Click. Another voice. Hers. Confirmed. Subject now compliant. Next version may begin. I laughed. Not because it was funny. Because there was nothing left to say. Later, I found the note taped to the back of the mirror. "If you're reading this, you're the version that gave up." I whispered to my reflection. "What if I want to remember who I was?" And it whispered back. "Then stop asking her permission." But I didn't. Because I'm afraid that if I take control back, I'll find out I was worse than she made me. Chapter 7, The Version That Survived. At some point, I stopped trying to be right. I just wanted to feel less wrong. I don't know how long it's been. Not because I lost track of time, but because I stopped believing in it. The clocks still tick. The sun still sets. But days don't move anymore. They recycle. and in every version, I become a little less certain I was ever someone worth remembering. She doesn't lie to me now. She doesn't need to. She just waits until I correct myself. Didn't we already talk about this? We've never owned a dog. No, I remember. You were with me that day. She doesn't push. She doesn't argue. She just lets the silence do the work. And I fill in the blanks like a good student. Because the longer I stay quiet, the more the air calms. I sleep better now. Which is terrifying. Because it means I've finally stopped resisting. Last night, I found the mirror moved again. Not physically. Not the frame. Just the image. The apartment behind me was different in the glass. Newer. Cleaner. A plant that doesn't exist on the counter. A book I never bought on the coffee table. And my face. Softer. Relaxed. Smiling. But I wasn't smiling. Not on the outside. Only the reflection. I confronted her again, for the last time. I want the truth, I said. She didn't look surprised. Just tired. The kind of tired you feel when you've already buried the body and someone keeps asking you where it is. Which truth? She asked. Mine. She walked into the hallway. I followed her. She opened the door I never saw before, the one that used to be a wall. Inside, a single chair, a screen, a file cabinet, a metal table. On the table, six folders, each one labeled with my name, each one marked, version 1, version 2, version 3, the final one, version 6 current. I opened the first. Inside, photographs, journal entries, drawings. Version 1 loved her obsessively. He wrote poems, gave gifts, lied gently, but never stopped needing to be right. Version 2 grew paranoid, started changing her memories, gaslit her into doubting her own reality, claimed it was love. Version 3 became violent, controlled everything. She left. Version 4 never existed. A decoy, a test, a placeholder. Version 5 begged her to stay. Version 6, me was never supposed to last this long. I looked at her. Why am I still here? She stepped close, touched my cheek like she was handling something fragile. Because you finally learned to let go. She pressed play on the screen. A montage began. All of me, in different clothes, different hair, different tones, talking to her. Screaming, laughing, crying, denying, apologizing. One begged on his knees. One tried to leave. One called her a monster. And one said, "Do whatever you need to do. Just don't leave me alone." She turned to me. That's the version I kept. I sat down in the chair, looked around the room that was never supposed to exist, then asked, "So what happens now?" She knelt beside me. Soft. Kind. Infinite. "Now you forget again. And I start over. But this time, I'll keep the good parts." She kissed my forehead, walked to the wall, pressed a button. The room blinked. And when it opened again, I was in the apartment. Morning light. The smell of coffee. She was making eggs. Wearing my shirt. Humming softly. She turned and smiled. "You're up." "Yeah," I said, rubbing my eyes. "Weird dreams. Want to talk about it?" "No," I said. "All right. Breakfast's almost ready." I sat on the couch. The mirror in the hallway was still crooked, but I didn't correct it, because I didn't remember ever needing to. Later, I walked past the bookshelf and noticed a new journal. Black leather. Blank. My name on the inside. In her handwriting. Property of version 7. I smiled, because I felt calm now. Centered. Fixed. And that meant one thing. She did it right this time.